Welcome to the Real P3 Podcast, your ultimate resource for swine professionals worldwide. Join your host, Casey Bradley, dedicated industry advocate, as we delve deep into the world of swine production. Tune in for expert insights, cutting-edge strategies, and meaningful discussions tailored specifically to empower and elevate swine professionals. From optimizing nutrition plans to exploring innovative techniques and connecting with industry pioneers, the Real P3 Podcast is your go-to platform to stay ahead in the dynamic realm of swine production. Today we have a special treat by changing it up a little bit and having a guest host from South Dakota State University, Caitlin McClellan. She is a master's student for Dr. Crystal Levesque, and I've worked with her on some different research, including some sow research with our other guest, Dr. Wesley Lyons with Pharmacosma on iron. So it's going to be a little different. We're going to include our Coffee and Careers mentorship. And now I'm going to turn it over to Caitlin to interview Dr. Lyons, and may just interject if I feel there's something I want to add.
Thank you, Dr. Bradley. I appreciate being on the podcast today. I just want to add quickly that Dr. Lyons has been a big supporter and mentor for the anemia research we've been doing here at South Dakota State. So I'm very thankful to have this conversation with him today on a topic that I'm particularly very passionate about. So I did bring some questions for him, so I'll just get right into it, I guess. So Dr. Lyons, from my understanding, the common approach right now across many pig operations involves administering the single dose of 200 milligrams of iron by 3 days of age, and based on some recent research, this maybe isn't as effective anymore. So with acknowledging that, what are some potential factors that contribute to the ineffectiveness of that traditional iron supplementation method in piglets?
Sure. First, thank you, Caitlin and Casey, for having me on the podcast. Very grateful to be here. And I, too, am passionate about anemia in piglets. So this is a fun conversation to have. You know, when we think about traditional iron supplementation in pigs, the very first mention of utilizing 200 milligrams of injectable iron for a pig was all the way back in 1959, some research that came out of University of Minnesota. A lot has changed in the way that we raise pigs since 1959. A lot has changed with the genetics. So much has changed in the way that we feed sows and the way that we house them and the way that we handle them and process them. All of these things have changed. And one thing that hasn't is the way we supplement them with iron. The one thing that has changed is the pig's need for iron as they are a faster growing, faster maturing. That need for iron just continues to rise. And so as we look across the industry and as we visit with producers and actually go into their operations and test piglets, we find a lot of what you're finding in your research, in that 200 milligrams may not be enough for the fast-growing genetics that we have in the industry today.
Yeah, I think for me, if I were to be thinking of it from like a human perspective, if we were to accelerate growth in humans, for example, we'd probably see a lot more of anemic children. So I think the acceleration of growth rates is for sure a big factor in that.
Well, the sad thing is we still do have anemia in humans, so it's not a dilemma that we still don't face. So I think, you know, even though iron seems like a basic mineral, I think in my mind, it still leaves us with lots of questions.
Absolutely. You know, when you look at global disease burden in humans, and I know this little trivia fact because the majority of the work that Pharmacosmos does is actually in human iron, injectable human iron. But when you look at global disease burden, iron deficiency anemia in humans is third or fourth top disease in the world affecting the human population, right in line with diabetes, actually. And so it's still out there, even in humans. And so I think we take a lot of the a lot of our cues on the research side from what's happening in the human research and development as well.
Yeah, writing my lit review for my study, I've had to dig into the human literature quite a lot because the anemia has been extensively studied in humans. And so I think it's very valuable information to look at and kind of making parallels between humans and pigs.
Absolutely. Yeah, all the human researchers that are studying anemia do it with a pig model. And then we kind of do it in reverse by taking what they learn in humans and applying it to pigs.
That's awesome. So my next question is, how would you suggest modifying or experimenting with the iron protocol to manage piglet anemia more effectively?
Sure. I think the first thing, the biggest thing that scares people, especially, well, anybody, is change, right? And so adding something or changing a protocol is always a scary thing on farms. And so I always suggest for veterinarians that are interested, for producers that are interested, that they can contact us. And we can go about it in one of two ways. We either I will physically visit with them and actually test their piglets at weaning for anemia just to get an idea about prevalence, or I will train their veterinarian to do that if that's what they're most comfortable with. And I will set their veterinarian up with the necessary tools to do that. And so I think that's kind of the starting place, is defining what your prevalence of anemia is on your farm. And really easy to do, really simple, very non-invasive for those piglets. And so defining what that anemia looks like at weaning is really the key indicator of the success of your program. Because pigs that wean anemic into the nursery, they tend to show the symptoms of anemia. They're lethargic. They don't get started on feed and water well. They don't grow well. And we also know that it takes several days of that piglet being exposed to feed for it to actually start being able to absorb that dietary iron. So we know that after a week or two in the nursery that they'll start absorbing dietary iron and they'll be fine. But before that, that's kind of that key transitional phase that we worry about for pigs every time, right? When we wean them into the nursery, that's the key target area. And so I would start first with testing, defining the problem, defining the prevalence. It may be that your farrowing staff has a perfect injection every single time. You're weaning pigs, you're giving it at the right time, you're weaning pigs at a weight where they're not exceeding that iron need that you've supplied them with. That certainly exists. There are certainly farms that, you know, more than 200 milligrams is not really necessary, but the majority of farms it is. And so defining the problem and then figuring out times when you're already going to be picking pigs up to try and modify that protocol. Really, the biggest recommendation is that if you're going to transition to a two-dose protocol, so 200 milligram injection at two different time points, the first dose really needs to be given before 3 days of life. And then the second dose needs to occur before probably 12 to 14 days.
So in regards to giving the iron injection at the perfect timing, if you're talking just doing the single iron dose, do you think changing the timing in where we're giving it maybe later than day three would be more effective? I mean, have you done any research on that, or know of any research that's been concluded on that?
Yeah, good question. So after day three, let's start with the piglets are born with a very low amount of stored iron that they receive from the sow via transplacental transfer. And so they're born with very low iron stores. And also the sow's milk is almost completely devoid of iron. They get about 1 milligram per day in all of the milk that they consume. And so, you know, by day three, they've really used up that iron that they receive from the sow transplacentally. And so giving the iron beyond day three actually has a delayed response in that piglet. And so you actually may see more anemia at weaning than if you were to move it down earlier. I'm doing a trial right now at Tosh Farms down in Tennessee, and we're doing various doses of iron to those pigs, but all pigs receive their first dose of iron at 24 hours of age, which a lot of people are a little nervous about. They think it's too early. I try to avoid that colostrum intake within the first 24 hours, but at 24 hours, I like that first dose being in the pig. We weaned all of those pigs. We have the the average hemoglobin level for, you know, every group. And of course, being a study, we had the same person giving every injection, and he was very intentional with all of his injections. And it surprised all of us, but all 200 pigs in the single 200 milligram dose group weaned at, on average, in an optimal hemoglobin range. And that was on a 22-day wean age. So those pigs were, you know, they were big, they were old. We expected that they were going to be anemic or on average in that kind of suboptimal range. But I think it just goes to show that that timing is important. And really, the dose of iron is not meant for is meant for treatment and prevention. And so I think that prevention piece is key, that you get that iron in there before the pig's body really needs it. Because if you give it too late, then they're trying to play catch up.
Let's take a quick break and hear from our founding partners, Swine Nutrition Management. Swine Nutrition Management is a consultancy service in South Africa, whereas pig nutritionists have a vision to provide customers with practical, up-to-date, and accurate nutritional information, which will add value to their farming enterprises by moving closer to unlocking the genetic potential of their animals. They develop tailored, cost-effective feeding programs for customers. Their approach is not to develop least cost, but rather best cost feed programs. By reviewing the entire cost structure of the farm, this includes a deep understanding of the production equation, which is driven by throughput, productivity, and feed efficiency. Now back to our episode.
Caitlin, can I interject a minute?
Sure, go ahead.
Well, I have done a lot of different iron strategies or protocols in my career, and the veterinarians seem to love to change it all the time. And depending on the flow, we like to put antibiotics into the iron. You know, I've done day one, I've done day three, day five, two injections. Do you think there's other things we're doing throughout this process? Because obviously we want to limit picking up the pig from a labor perspective, but a welfare. But do you think there's other things that we're injecting, from sow vaccinations to antibiotic treatment, that may affect the balance of iron in the system in your mind?
I mean, there are certainly certain vitamins and minerals that will utilize some of the same kind of pathways of iron metabolism and absorption. As far as, you know, concurrent medications concurrently given medications that would interfere with the absorption, I'm not sure. I know that, you know, when we're looking into studies specifically, we always try to control for our male piglets, just because, you know, all piglets are going to lose a little bit of blood from tail docking, but male piglets will lose some blood from castration as well. And in those instances, you know, if you don't balance for gender within studies, you can see more anemia within one group or another if you have more males. But as far as, you know, sow vaccinations or medications, I haven't done any research into seeing, you know, if there's something that may be prohibiting or preventing proper iron absorption.
Do you feel the missed pigs or the anemic pigs are not always due to dose or timing, but application or improper application?
Absolutely. We see that often, that, you know, a lot of people, when they implement a two-dose program, and we have a lot of producers who have switched to that after seeing some of the recent research that we've done. In all of our studies, we never see, in our well-controlled studies, we never see an advantage at weaning for those pigs that are, you know, in the two-dose protocol. No weight advantage. We do see an advantage in hemoglobin, but at least on the weight and average daily gain, no differences. And that's because every pig's getting a great, perfect injection because it's a controlled study, right? When producers put this into practice in the field, they actually do experience oftentimes an advantage in that two-dose protocol in weight gain. We have one large system that recently implemented at 35,000 sows. They experienced half a pound of wean weight advantage in the two-dose protocol, and they came back and said, well, you told us we shouldn't expect any. And we said, well, it's not that you changed anything that or are doing, you know, anything better than what we've done in previous studies. It's just that at least every pig now is getting one full dose of iron, whereas before there were probably some that were missing.
And sorry to hijack, Caitlin, but I was just curious. I'll let you take back over.
Okay, so my next question is kind of about the implementing the second dose on farm and what some of the cost implications are for that. And if you're going and assessing piglets on a farm and you go and report it to the producer that maybe 50% of their piglet herd is anemic, I guess, what are you going to, you know, imply to them as to why it's going to be worth it to add a second dose possibly?
Yeah. We've definitely changed the way, obviously, this year with the markets being so miserable. We've changed the way that we've approached that, right? And so, you know, I can remember it being in private practice as a veterinarian. You don't add anything to those pigs when the market's bad, right? You don't spend more money when the market is not going to pay off. And so we've definitely had to change the way that we discuss this second dose program. Just at the most basic level, we tend to assume that a dose of iron, and it varies based on your supplier and contracts, et cetera, but a dose of iron is probably going to run you somewhere around 20 cents for a pig. We've done the math on how much time it takes to pick up a pig and inject a pig, et cetera. And so the labor for that, we add another 5 cents. And so we say it costs you a quarter per pig to implement a second dose of iron. If you're already going to be picking pigs up, then, you know, at another time point, then you can weigh the difference on that labor cost for yourself. But 25 cents tends to be what we talk about. When we look at the study, and I know that you'll be interviewing Dr. Chevalier, who has run a lot of the iron research that we've done over the last several years. When we look at the return on investment that we see from Dr. Chevalier's study, that depending on feed prices at the time, the ROI is somewhere between $2 and $4 per pig. And so obviously right now, that's not going to be $2 to $4 that you're going to be putting in your pocket at the end when we're marketing those pigs. But at least that extra investment of that 25 cents isn't going to cost you more when you go to sell those animals. And hopefully I hate to say this, but hopefully you lose less, right, on that animal.
So I guess besides from the benefits of adding that second dose, do you think there's any potential negative consequences on, I guess, maybe iron overload or kind of excessive iron use in the piglet? Do you think there's any worries about that?
Sure. I'm glad you asked because somewhere along the line, you know, veterinarians get this notion that it's very dangerous to increase the amount or the dose of iron. I can remember one of my very first mentors when I came out of school and started working at one of the large genetics companies. One of my mentors said, "We only give 150 milligrams of iron because if you give more than that, it's toxic." And I never forgot that until I got into private practice a couple years later, and everyone was giving 200 milligrams, and some farms were experimenting with even more, and they weren't seeing detrimental effects. And so this is something that I was interested in studying. And so last year, we partnered with Dr. Glenn Almond at NC State University, and we did our marketing team won't let us call it a toxicity trial, a titration trial, where we studied various doses at a single time point in piglets. We did that in partnership with Prestige Farms, and that study is not published yet because we decided to do a phase two of it this summer. But the key takeaways are that as long as those pigs are receiving that iron from a good quality iron source, there should be no risk of any sort of toxicity, even at 4x the dose that we recommend. So we in that study, we looked at 200 milligrams at a single time point, 400 milligrams at a single time point, and 800 milligrams at a single time point in pigs that were between 24 and 48 hours old. And then we followed those pigs, and at each week we would sacrifice 5 pigs from each of those groups, look at full tissue analysis, histopath, liver, mineral panels, et cetera. And there was absolutely no evidence of toxicity in those pigs. So at least for good quality iron products, there should be no risk of increasing that. And if you are seeing issues with, you know, iron administration causing effects in the pigs, then it's more likely that it's a vitamin E challenge in the sow herd.
Yeah, this is probably very outdated, but the NRC states that anything over 200 milligrams is toxic to the pig. So it's interesting.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of that data, there was some of the old formulations of iron. So the iron that Pharmacosmos sells is Uniferon, and it's iron dextran. There was an old molecule called iron dextrin, T-R-I-N, and that iron apparently did have a lot of potential for toxicity in pigs. And so I think some of this, you know, this paradigm that we've had for a long time of, you know, you can't give more than X amount of iron because it's toxic is probably some past knowledge from older products that have a different safety profile.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, so my next question is, what are some methods and tools that are currently utilized for detecting anemia or iron deficiency anemia in sows and piglets?
Yeah, so we utilize on-farm a handheld device called a HemoQ that is pretty rapid. We like to say that it's rapid until we're in the field using it, and then I feel like we're just waiting forever for it to spit out the result. But it's a minimally invasive procedure for piglets. Basically, what we would do if we were testing for anemia prevalence in a herd is we would go and we would take 30 piglets at random that are wean age piglets, poke their ear vein with a needle, get a single drop of blood into, they're called micro cuvettes, and then we put that into the device, and within 60 seconds or so, it gives us a reading for that individual pig and its hemoglobin level. And then from that, there's an established range of reference values for, is it optimal? Is it then in this kind of suboptimal, or another way to say that, at-risk category, or is it truly anemic? And so we utilize that for piglets, and there's also quite a bit of work that's been done and that's ongoing with you, Caitlin, on using that in sows as well.
Yeah, so I use it a lot, so I'm very familiar with that device. But do you ever, or do you foresee these tools being implemented into production barns and maybe as part of like a selection criteria for replacement gilts, or just implementing consistent testing by barn staff every so often?
Now a word from the Sunswine Group. The Sunswine Group was founded in 2020 by Dr. Casey Bradley, and developed a service-based company to fill in the gaps for agribusinesses, swine and poultry producers, and individuals alike. Our core business focuses on research and development, technical writing, and data analytics. However, this is all a catalyst for Dr. Bradley's passion to faithfully serve through Science Plus Heart. This includes her mentoring programs such as Coffee and Careers in Animal Science and this podcast, The Real P3. And also her training and professional development programs that are now coming under the SunGrow brand. We hope to continue to grow through you, so contact us today at thesunswinegroup.com or on our social media channels, and let's sow the seeds of prosperity together.
And now back to our episode.
Get out of my head, Caitlin. I have a meeting coming up with actually some different genetics companies to discuss looking at replacement animals and their anemia status at that time. Unfortunately, the HemoQ device is a little cost prohibitive to have, you know, one on every farm. You know, to get the device plus the cuvettes that you need, it's going to run somewhere around $500+ per setup. And so that's part of why I visit farms and bring the supplies and tools with me. You know, we certainly have explored other options, other less expensive options, but at least today, the only validated meter for use in piglets is that HemaQ device. And because of the cost, I don't think it'll become common everywhere, but we are on every farm, but we do have several veterinary clinics where we have, you know, trained them how to do it, given them the tools so that they can then use that with their producers.
That's very cool. For me, that kind of wraps up my questions that I had for you. I don't know if Dr. Bradley has any more she wants to ask.
Sure. I'm going to add some. I was going to say the HemaQ, compared to some of the other biomarkers I've ran, it's a breeze. bleeding sows and everything. But we didn't touch on anemia. It seems to be, you know, you mentioned Dr. Allman, and I've had several conversations with him. We look into the prolapse issues. We look in from the sow perspective and stillborns. You know, Dr. Allman's work was, you know, anemia in sows. How do we go back? You know, we always talk about iron and dosage for the piglets. Is there an optimal iron injection regime that we need to also give our sows? Because it appears nutritionally we're not meeting those needs, because, you know, to me, it's a lot of interrelationships with other minerals. But
yeah, it's really interesting when you look at the body of evidence for sow anemia. You know, there's Dr. Allman's study, there's Caitlin's work that's ongoing, a really nice, you know, longitudinal study in those animals. There have been other studies, you know, from other countries looking at anemia in sows. And a lot of that work really kind of began comparing it and extrapolating it from human anemia. And so pregnant females that are anemic, that don't have access to, iron or, iron injection or really good sources of dietary iron, have a much higher prevalence of stillborns, unfortunately. And so Dr. Allman was looking, like you mentioned, at a lot of that work. And so I think there's a lot to still be learned from that that realm of how do we properly treat for iron deficiency in sows. You know, Caitlin's got some really good work showing, you know, at different time points how that the hemoglobin and hematocrit in those sows fluctuates. But that overall, as they age, that hemoglobin and iron status tends to decrease. And so, you know, today I don't have a good answer for an optimal, you know, regime for sows. You know, one of the biggest things that we don't know, and I am aware that we do have customers who dose sows with iron today. If they see one, you know, that looks pale or maybe she has an ulcer or whatever, I can't make a recommendation on that just because we don't know what the meat withdrawal time would be on that. You know, it's not the target animal for our drug. But yeah, I think there's a lot of work yet to be done there to understanding sow anemia. You know, when we look at the sow diets, they should have way more iron than what they need in those diets. And yet a certain percentage of those animals just don't seem to be absorbing it. Same thing happens in humans, right? They're like 50% of pregnant females that develop pregnancy anemia can't either tolerate or absorb dietary iron. And so they need an intravenous intervention. And so, I think it's a really interesting question. It's something that, you know, we're certainly studying and trying to understand better so that potentially we can come with a solution one day.
And I want to go back to the piglet, because as a nutritionist, you know, when we deal with E. coli, I've done some work in the past with superdosing phytase and iron, and, you know, evaluating, we don't want to feed too much iron in the nursery because it's going to give us post-weaning diarrhea. Have you seen any correlations in between, you know, E. coli breaks in the nursery and iron status cut, you know, at weaning? Or what's your thoughts on that?
Y'all are hitting all my favorite topics today. So we have a poster at Layman Conference that'll be coming up in a few weeks. We partnered with Dr. Young Dahl Jang. He was at University of Wisconsin River Falls. He's now at University of Georgia. But we had that same question in Dr. Chevalier's work that we did last year with the two doses. We did some genomics work, first time that we had done anything like that, and looking at the impact of a second injection of iron on the gene expression in those pigs at weaning. After we applied all the, you know, fancy statistical analysis tools that are way over my head, we got back a set of genes that we either significantly impacted in an up or down regulation mechanism. And some of the major ones that we impacted were related to gut health and gut integrity, in specifically in the small intestine. And so we were really interested in that. And around the same time, Dr. Jang approached us and said, I want to do this project looking at iron in nursery diets. Can you, you know, do you have any input? So long story short, we did a study very similar to Dr. Chevalier's, where we compared one versus two doses in the farrowing house. And then Dr. Jang formulated two different diets in the nursery, one that was a straight up NRC recommendation of 100 parts per million of iron, and the other one where we added an additional 100 ppm, which is fairly industry standard to have, you know, more than that 100 ppm. All of those pigs were challenged with an F18 E. coli within the first week of the nursery, as well as rotavirus group A and C. And the pigs that the zero ppm of iron, or the straight NRC level of iron versus the added iron, actually had a slightly opposite effect of our hypothesis. The added iron group returned to a normal fecal score faster, or, you know, returned from their scour to a normal stool faster. But the biggest impact was one versus two doses of iron. And when we look at those two groups split out, the two-dose group had a significantly increased body weight, average daily feed intake, and a significant reduction in fecal score faster than the single-dose group. And so when we relate that back to the genomics work that we did in Dr. Chevalier's study, one of the other genes that we impacted was the HAMP gene, hepcidin antimicrobial peptide. And the cool thing about that gene is that it actually, it's one of the key mechanisms that tells iron where to go and be stored in the body. But it also binds iron into a form that's not usable by those bacteria, by E. coli and Salmonella. And so that's where that antimicrobial piece of the name comes from. That's kind of in juxtaposition to dietary iron, which then is going into the gut and is there and readily available for those bacteria to kind of grab onto and start utilizing for their proliferation. So, yeah, it's crazy. It's exciting. We've got a lot of more work to do in this area, but it does really seem like injectable iron should not, based on the gene expression and on this study that was just released, the injectable iron should not have an impact on E. coli or Salmonella growth.
That is really cool work. And I mean, I've kept up with Tyler a little bit as well throughout his PhD. So as always, I'm going to allow our guests to turn the table, but I'm going to have you direct the question to Caitlin versus me. So I'm just curious if you have any questions for Caitlin before we go.
Let's see. Yeah. Okay. So you've finished your master's, right?
No, I've got two more semesters.
Two more semesters.
Yeah.
So is there a PhD on the horizon?
Yes, for sure.
Yes.
I'm not exactly sure where, but yes, I will bet you I will be starting my PhD at the conclusion of my master's. I just not quite sure where yet, but I'll probably have that figured out in a couple months.
And what do you hope to study in your PhD?
So in a perfect world, I would study anemia, but knowing that that maybe not be possible depending on, you know, where I go or who I research under or, you know, funding. I kind of hope in general I can, you know, stick with sows. That's kind of my passion. I really like being in the sow barn. And I think really looking at anemia in sows is kind of a way at looking at how we can improve sow survivability and longevity. And that's kind of where I've fit my interest into. And so if I don't get to study anemia and keep using the hemoglobin monitor, I would like to stick with, being a part of research that kind of aids in looking at ways we can improve sow survivability and health.
That's awesome. I appreciate that. And I know the whole industry does, because it is a huge factor in the profitability of farmers, is if they could maintain those sows and increase their longevity and survivability, it only helps everyone. So that's awesome. Thank you.
And before we go, Dr. Lyons, if somebody wanted to reach out to you and learn more about your research and your company, how do they go about that?
Sure. They can either email me or text, either one. I'm not afraid of putting my phone number out there for someone to text or call me. My email address is a little funky, so hopefully we can, put it in the show notes too, but it's wly@pharmacosmos.com. And that's pharmacosmos.com. And also feel free to reach out via phone or text. My number is 731-363-1658.
Well, thank you very much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'd also like to say thank you for your time and expertise on this subject. I think your insights are very valuable and can be very useful to others.